Shalom and welcome again to another Seekers of Meaning, the podcast arm of Jewish Sacred Aging. I am Rabbi Richard Address, the director of Jewish Sacred Aging and the host of these podcasts. Welcome and thank you again for joining us. Seekers of Meaning hope to explore issues related to our own aging, as well as the implications of longevity for our families and our community. We welcome your comments and suggestions to me. You can email them to me at rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com. We also invite you to visit our homepage, the website, jewishsacredaging.com, as well as the Jewish Sacred Aging on Facebook. And it is with a great deal of pleasure that we welcome to this edition of Seekers of Meaning, Mr. Mo Funk, the president and CEO of Beth Shalom Senior Living, located in Richmond, Virginia. Mo, nice to see you. Welcome. Thank you for joining us. And I hope all is well and you're healthy and safe and everything's cool with you and your family.
Thank you for having me.
We want to explore some of the issues related to really what you do at Beth Shalom, the whole issue of, first of all, the vocabulary of what all these various levels things, because words and terms are tossed around, and also be helpful to those people who may be joining us either by video or listening on this podcast who now may be being faced with the decision of, I can no longer care for this person I love, and I really now have to face that possibility of making a choice of a facility, but I may not even know where to go and how to go about doing that. So these are some of the things we'd like to get into, but there's been so much in the news lately vis-a-vis the pandemic, and you're living it every single day. I want to start with really this because it's very contemporary, and hopefully we're slowly but surely emerging out of this nightmare. How has that pandemic really impacted, first of all, Beth Shalom and really your industry?
Well, it has been for lack of a better way of saying it, an extremely difficult year, full stop. Yeah. You know, abruptly, March of last year, we shut down the doors to our campus without any notice to any family members or residents or staff. Because we felt it was necessary in light of what we were seeing in the community and around the country. You know, roll the calendar forward. We learned a lot over the course of this past year. We certainly have shored up all of our the typical things you would expect, infection control procedures, understanding a little bit more about how to cohort and manage an infected population better. You know, sadly, not just here, but throughout the country, lots of lives were lost. You know, we still sort of mourn those losses every day. I am very proud of the team that I have here, the effort that they had shown throughout the year. We've come, I guess, on the other side of this with sort of a better understanding of how our own policies and procedures work on a very intimate basis. Out of some bad comes some good.
Yeah, I mean, you use the word intimate basis, and there has been this certain lack of intimacy that all my colleagues and the chaplains who I've talked to, especially who are chaplains at CCRCs or assisted living, et cetera, and as well as congregational colleagues, to just be with a person and a family in a moment of spiritual crisis has really taken its toll. How have you handled that? I mean, do you have an on-site chaplain?
We actually have two chaplains. We have a rabbi who is a chaplain here who is part-time, and we also have another individual who is a Christian chaplain as well. And he is here part-time. They were very helpful in sort of dealing with the overall panic of the situation that we were faced abruptly at the end of March, where, you know, you mentioned connectivity. There was absolutely no ability to connect to people other than by maybe a telephone. While we had the technologic capability with Wi-Fi and those kind of things, and you can still get out to the internet and those things, but we had no real programmatic way of establishing virtual visits, which became certainly the only connective capability that we had during the lockdown. So we had to kind of build that over the course of weeks to make sure that we had the ability to connect people virtually so that they can connect face to face, because they lost the ability to see them. Certainly they lost human touch of the hug and the high five and all those things that go along with that intimate relationship that you have with a family member. So it was a scramble, and you know, we were able to pull that off and schedule virtual visits for anybody who wanted them on our campus.
You know, you raised the virtual visits. So many people have learned technology because they had no choice. And looking forward, as we emerge out of this, because I have this conversation with congregations all the time, how do you see technology now changing the nature of what you do and what happens within Beth Shalom?
Well, certainly we've learned to adapt. Meetings are held using technology through Zoom and conferences, video conferences like we're having today. I think telemedicine has skyrocketed to the top of the sort of senior living world's attention span. Wow. You know, we typically had not used telemedicine in this setting. Hospitals certainly were using that well for many years now, but, you know, senior living was just not a place where telemedicine sort of existed. That has sort of risen to the sort of the top of the technologic requirement need that senior living communities, I think, will have starting now and moving forward into the future, to connect caregivers and providers, you know, remotely. Certainly, it makes it quicker and easier to get a consult in that fashion.
Yeah, it's fascinating, because I think you're right. I mean, the pandemic has opened the door to a lot of creative thinking this way. It's kind of exciting in a way, not only in what your industry, but also in congregational life and worship, and certainly in education. It's changed the nature of education. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned congregational life. We even had to have Shabbat services through Zoom.
Oh yeah.
You know, as well as Sunday worship services for our Christian residents. Yeah, so it kind of changed overnight our need to be technologically capable.
And also the people in residence there also had to create a learning curve on how to become more familiar with it. So it's very fascinating what will emerge as a result of this on all of our fronts. So the vocabulary, I mean, this is, I'm sure you run across this too, people I work with in my work in Jewish sacred aging, just the various vocabulary. So Beth Shalom is a CCRC, right?
No, Beth Shalom is a multi-level senior living community.
Okay.
There's a significant difference between us and what we would call a CCRC/life plan community today. A life plan community, or CCRC, which is sort of the old term, is an entrance fee model where someone pays X number of dollars as a down payment or a payment for an apartment, typically in the six-figure range or more. It allows them to come in. Typically, they enter in at an independent resident, and they move down the continuum of care in that CCRC or life plan community, moving from independent to assisted to skilled based upon their needs. And there are certainly fee structures associated with this entrance fee model. You continue to pay as you go, and you pay depending upon what setting you're in. Certainly less resources are needed for you independently, more resources are needed for you as an assisted living resident. And then certainly it increases again when you move into a skilled nursing facility. And you sort of pay for that entrance fee model. Typically, those are very large communities, you know, hundreds and hundreds of residents on that campus. Our campus is a multi-level senior living community. You can enter in anywhere, whether you enter in directly as a skilled nursing resident, a memory care resident, an assisted living resident, independent resident. Our independent happens to be an affordable housing apartment building, HUD 202. But we have two assisted livings, one independent affordable housing building, and one skilled nursing facility on our campus. We have approximately 300 or so, maybe 310 residents on our campus every day.
And so that your facility, Bestrom, includes like skilled nursing and a memory care unit?
Yes, we have a memory care unit in all three of our, what I call our healthcare buildings. Our skilled nursing facility is a memory unit. In both of our assisted living facilities, there are two independent facilities on our campus, different names, different years when they were built as the campus built out over the 76 years of our existence. But yeah, they both have memory units as well.
So I imagine that there's a different a different cost pricing points for all these various different types, correct?
Yes, yes. As an example, at least for us, one of our assisted living facilities is older, has smaller apartments. It also has a memory unit as well. The cost structure for those smaller units, smaller apartments, is lower than our newer assisted living facility on campus, which has large apartments and it also has a memory unit. So the price structure is really based upon the size of the unit itself.
Say again.
Care is similarly delivered in both places, just the physical plant, because of its size and its amenities, there is a price structure difference.
The statistics that I've seen from the Alzheimer's Association, it seemed to indicate we're just about to hit a wave of huge increase in dementia and Alzheimer's cases. And they also have taught us, because we've done some work with them, that the country is just not prepared for this. That we just don't have enough skilled nurses who are trained in this area or geriatricians to really handle this. From where you're sitting inside the industry, you know, are you seeing this? Are you seeing this upsurge?
I'm extremely worried about the human capital piece of this equation. There aren't enough individuals willing and either trained or capable of working in these environments. So we are seeing currently, and I think we'll continue to see a complete shortage of staff available to provide the necessary services, whether they're nurses, whether they're CNAs, whether they're doctors, whether they're, other sort of ancillary medical people who are willing to work in this environment. There is going to be a significant need for memory care. People are healthier, living longer. As a result of that, it's likely that some of us will end up with either some kind of dementia or Alzheimer's, and we'll need some additional assistance, possibly placement in a memory care unit like we have here on our campus. But that wave is definitely coming.
Politics aside, so I don't want to make this a political question, but there's plans from the current administration to increase funding for this and support caregivers, et cetera, do you see this as, would this be helpful for your industry to have this additional resources or not?
I certainly always welcome any kind of additional support. We rely on the government for a lot of the payer sources on our campus, both Medicare and Medicaid. and also by extension, the sort of managed care world as well. And if, you know, reimbursements don't go up, we're going to be in trouble because naturally, as everything else, costs go up. Right. You know, staff want a raise, they want more benefits, healthcare costs are increasing for us to provide to staff. So our costs are keep rising. But unfortunately, the reimbursement rates have leveled off and are not going anywhere. Where the government can be helpful is recognizing the fact that they need to do something about reimbursement. Certainly on the Medicaid side, I'll give you an example. In our nursing facility, a typical day that we get paid for to provide soup to nuts care for someone in a skilled nursing facility, we're getting a little bit over $200 a day. On the other flip side, if someone is eligible and qualifies for Medicare short-term care in the nursing home, we're probably averaging $600 a day.
Wow.
Okay. All right. And I will tell you that the person who's coming in for that $600 a day bed rate, who just had a maybe a hip replacement, is still capable of moving around and doing things and participating, but they just need that additional rehabilitation services. But then that person who is in the memory unit, for example, in the skilled nursing facility, we're getting $200 a day in a unit where the amount of staff that's needed to just care for properly dementia unit resident is significant. So I'm all for some increased reimbursements all around for these services.
So I mean, you're the CEO of the facility, and given what you just talked about, there doesn't seem to be an urgency of conversation in the country around this. Am I misreading this?
You're not misreading that at all.
Why? What? From your inside the industry, and you deal with this every single day, and you're basically sounding an alarm, saying, "Look, this is happening. This train is coming." Why do you think there's not a greater sense of urgency conversation?
No, I think the generation that we're caring for now, they have had wealth, and they were able to bring wealth with them to the communities where they're living, the senior living communities, whether it's us or CCRC down the block or whatever. But they are exhausting all of those resources. They will not have resources to leave behind to the generation behind them. That generation behind them is not as well suited as they were for their care. They are not savers. They're not, you know, if tomorrow you told someone you need to move into a senior living community, even at their current ability today, and let's say they're 55 years old, and say you need to move in tomorrow, and you told them that you needed to spend $110,000 a year to move into a skilled nursing facility to pay privately for your year of care, they would not have the resources to be able to do it. Wow. So it is a huge problem. And at some point in time, there's going to have to be some national conversation about how do we as Americans take care of our elderly folks in a safe and secure manner. And I just don't know how that's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, for when we talk about this in the work that I do, I always would work with a congregation saying, look, this is a moral, ethical, and social justice issue. And it is a family systems issue, because it's just not the person who needs care and, let's say, the person, the caregiver, but it impacts an entire family system, especially as you're alluding to, the economics of it definitely is a multi-generational family systems issue. So I'm just, when you mentioned that, I was just curious to find out your take.
We hear daily the conversation when people inquire about placing somebody here on campus. I can't take care of mom or dad any longer. Okay. And when they finally understand what the costs are associated with their care, they go, oh my God. And they say, well, maybe we just need to figure out how to do it at home. And what ends up happening is their home life, quite frankly, suffers. This is my view. I mean, I'm not saying that it's always the case, but my view suffers because there has to be someone there to care for that individual, to make sure that he or she is safe. Certainly if someone has dementia, that they are You're not going to wander off and leave the house. You can't leave an older person alone who needs service and care. There's incontinence issues that are constantly happening. And you know what? That's at the time when you're caring for an elderly parent, when you're supposed to be experiencing your own early retirement and doing the things that you want to do, that you put on the back burner because you've been working all those years. So it is a societal issue that, I don't think Americans have handled well from a planning standpoint.
Oh, no, because there's still a lot of denial, you know, won't happen to me, won't happen to my dad or my mom. Some of the research I've seen in some of our work, and talking to some of your colleagues, they've indicated that there's been a significant shift as my generation, as the boomers age, that the average age of people entering a facility is almost like 10 years later than it was a generation ago. And I'm hearing that people just had this conversation with somebody at a facility that's being built out here in suburban Philadelphia, that the people that they're seeing wanting to come into the facility are in their 80s rather than in their 70s. Are you seeing this age shift?
The average entrant into a senior living community today is somewhere around 86 years old.
Wow. So,
and quite frankly, I think the statistic that I understand is still available out there is that they are coming in independent, living independently. So they may have a walker, which maintains their independence. They may need a little help here and there from an aide from time to time, but they're still, quote unquote, considered independent. The problem is they are, unfortunately, one event from sliding down that slope into the next level of care, and in some cases, jumping the shark, if you will, to skilled nursing. Okay, that's how quickly those things can happen for someone at a healthy 86 year old.
Falls are the greatest danger. Are they not?
Falls are certainly a huge problem. Yes.
Because I've read that. Even now, some of the architecture is changing in some of these new apartment blocks that are being built specifically for our generation. But the types of lighting and anti-fall things and just little things to prevent a fall. But we've all talked to people who said, oh, yes, they fell, they broke their hip, and their life just radically changed all of a sudden. If I'm that 85-year-old and it's time, and I know it's time, I can't live by myself and I don't want to move in with my kids and they may live a couple thousand and I'm going to come to you. What do I need to ask you?
Well, one of the things that over the years, I want to make sure that these our folks are communicating with prospective residents is that they're entering into the right setting for them at that time, that they're not entering a setting that because of cost or payment is not right for them. If you're independent, you should be an independent. If you're assisted, you should be an assisted. If you're skilled, you should be skilled. You shouldn't be moving to a skilled nursing facility because you're running out of resources and that's the only available place for you to get Medicaid, okay? So you're in the wrong place at the wrong time. And you're there for the wrong reason because the reason is payment. So I'm a real big proponent on making sure people are admitted into the right place for them at that time. They can move down the continuum when it's necessary, but I think that's important on the way in. But there are definitely a series of questions that one would want to ask of not only us, but anybody. What is their staffing like? What does medication administration look like? How do medications get delivered? Can my mom still be on her prescription plan? What are the additional costs for services beyond your room rate? What is the life enrichment program look like? How is my mom or my dad, or how am I, if I'm the one inquiring myself, going to be engaged daily? Is there opportunities for additional learning along the way? Just because you're 85 doesn't mean that you're not capable of learning something new or enjoying a class of some kind, whether it's in person or remote. There are a lot of sort of questions that you can certainly pull them up on the internet and find laundry list of them. But I would bring those questions, and I'd get those questions asked up front before I made any decision. So you kind of get a sense of what that sort of setting would be like to live in.
If I'm an adult child and I've had this conversation with my, let's say, mom or dad, and it's time, and we've all agreed that it's time, and I'm going to walk into a facility in my area, are there certain things visually? I mean, I have my checklist. I've written down the questions that you just asked. But as I walk in, are there certain things visually that I should be aware of that will tell me more about a facility than the beautiful brochure?
Oh, absolutely. Certainly your eyes and your nose are really important in this. Is the place clean? Does it smell okay? But your observations when you walk in should be, one, certainly how you're addressed on the way in. We also need to take sort of a look down that hall and see how staff is engaging with residents. And what does that look like? Making sure that those conversations, interactions that you're witnessing in front of you are appropriate and helpful. And so you can kind of understand how you might be treated or approached throughout your day by staff.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point. I mean, put yourself in that position and say, if I was here, how would I want to be treated? And am I observing that?
Right. Address our new staff members through orientation, I share with them, I said, you could be having a really bad day and have a really bad interaction with somebody down the hall. But you got to be really careful, because all eyes are on you, because that family member that's sitting with her mother or father down the hallway is witnessing this. Okay.
Right.
And they're going to leave with the fear that my mom or my dad would be treated that way. So there has to be some understanding about how people are treated, how people are talked to. Just because you're confused, disoriented, not capable, have bad hearing, you should be, you should be addressed properly, and conversation should be appropriate in every setting, no matter what's going on with you.
Before we conclude, there was an article last month in the Sunday Times about nursing homes, facilities post-pandemic. And one of the themes of that is it was really that our baby boom generation will start seeking alternative living arrangements as we get into the fourth stage of our life, as opposed to going into, like, where my mom was in a facility and et cetera, et cetera. Are you picking any of this up? I mean, are you seeing people saying, we're going to go and buy a house and have three or four of our friends move in together and pool our resources so we can pay for those? Are you starting to see that?
Well, yeah, we're starting to see this for a couple of reasons. One is the boomer generation has no interest in paying any large sums of money up front. They see themselves moving from community to community. I'm going to live here for 6 months. I'm going to go there for 6 months. And they want to be able to do that. They don't want to be locked into one place, one dining room, one apartment. They want to travel and they want to move around. So the CCRCs, who are asking for these high entrance fees, are probably going to, in my view, are going to have a little bit of difficulty. There'll be people still do that and want that safety net and to be in one place. But the vast majority of people probably will not want to do that. So they are seeking the alternatives that you're describing. Can I live and partner with somebody else who's a friend and we can share an apartment. Our spouses are gone. We can share the apartment together. We can save on some. Why do we have to have two different apartments? We can live together, save some money in that way, and maybe bring in care that can care for both of us for our needs and split those costs. So there are, I think we're going to see a little bit of a shift because, the people who are entering into senior living today are 86 years old, okay, 87 years old. Some of them are coming even, in their 90s, okay? And there's so many options today to get care in the community. There's home health care, there's hospice, there's, private duty, firms that send in aides to help you. I mean, so there's so many options to maintain yourself in the community. People are starting to learn about them and take advantage of them.
Wow. Mr. Mo Funk, the president and CEO of Beth Shalom Senior Living in Richmond, Virginia. Thank you very, very much. This has been very educational and I hope informative to those of you out there who are perhaps contemplating making some transitions with members of your family. Mo, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Stay safe, stay healthy, and continued success. And I appreciate it very much. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And thanks for having me today. Bye-bye.
And thank all of you for watching, listening on today's edition of Seekers of Meaning, the TV show and podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. Remember, the show is available on the Roku streaming service. If you don't know what that is, your grandchild definitely will instruct you. And again, we welcome your comments and suggestions. You can email me at rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com. We invite you again to visit our Facebook page. And if you'd like to make a tax-free donation, which helps support our work and these podcasts, go to the website, jewishsacredaging.com, click on the donate button. Seekers of Meaning is produced in the broadcast center of Lubetkin Media Companies here in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. And again, a grateful appreciation to our producer, Steve Lubetkin. Again, I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Address. I look forward to greeting you on our next Seekers of Meaning TV show and podcast. And until then, stay safe, everybody. Stay healthy. Shalom.